brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 10 for Thursday, December 1st, 2011, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichor. Hello and welcome to the technology.ie podcast in the Edgecast Media Studios. I'm Conor Muinichon in his office in Black Knight HQ in Carlo. We've got Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Conor. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Not bad. At least it's not raining now, which is a good thing.
Good. And in Slovenia, we've got Andraz Tori, who is CTO of Zemanta. Andraz, what's the weather like there?
Oh, it's getting colder and colder. And thank you for inviting me to the show.
You're very welcome, Andraz. And later we're going to ask you about Zemanta. It's a blogger's tool, and you can tell us more about it and the company in general. We're also going to talk about Facebook. There's a lot of news about them this week. They've settled their privacy case with the Federal Trade Commission in the United States. They're submitting to privacy audits, and they promise to be good. The return of the tech IPO, Groupon and LinkedIn have done so, and we're now talking about Zynga and, of course, Facebook itself. And we'll hear about cloud computing in Cloudy Connemara, or perhaps a story that wasn't a story at all. But very briefly before we start off, Michaela, last week on the programme we were looking ahead to Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving in the United States, a good day for business, and Cyber Monday, as they call it as well, which is the first Monday back to work after Thanksgiving. It's an American thing, of course. But did we see any effect of it here in Europe? Did you see any impact on Black Knight servers for any of your clients?
Oh, it's interesting you should ask. I mean, definitely there's a load of Irish companies who are either selling into Ireland and kind of picking up on that hype because so many people would shop on Amazon that they'd be aware of it, or others who are selling to the US. Prince August, who you may remember from, you know, when you were a child, used to make the tin soldiers.
That's right.
They were running a special just for shipping to the US, not to Ireland, not to the rest of Europe, but just for purchases to the US, where they were giving free shipping for any orders placed up until, I think it was Monday night, which I thought was, you know, very, very interesting, that, you know, they would just target the US market only. And I've seen quite a few other clients doing specials just for the weekend.
Did you see anything in terms of traffic that you could talk about in terms of traffic coming to Irish or to Black Knight hosted sites from the United States? Would it be something that moved the needle, as it were?
No, not really. I mean, you know, we wouldn't really notice. The kind of thing we would look at, you see, is the overall traffic across the entire network.
Okay.
Unless, of course, you know, a particular site was, I would say slash dotted, but that's a bit kind of passé. I don't know what the 2011 equivalent is of slash dotted is. Is it reddited? Or, I don't know, Andraz, what do you think?
We have like a dashboard where we have a trend of our bloggers, what they're writing about, and Thanksgiving definitely shoot up very high. However, now everything is already very, very steady, warming up for the Christmas. So kind of, we even talked with a lot of bloggers and everybody says, oh, Thanksgiving, Black Monday, that's past now. Let's think about Christmas.
That's interesting, because what I asked Michaela, Andraz, was about, I suppose, traffic and load on servers and hosting and things like that. But you measure a different kind of thing, because your tool, one aspect of it is a plugin that people can have for their blog software, their blog content management system, and it helps them to find related content to what they're typing about. But that gives you an insight, doesn't it, into what people are actually blogging about out there?
Yes, of course. And we often see stories on our dashboard and we say, oh, we have to check on BBC what's going on in, I don't know, Libya or something like that. And we have kind of a pulse of blogging being measured. We see two big dips during the year of blogging. So people, really, the biggest dip is in around New Year. Like 2 weeks before New Year, people blog a lot, like one third or one half less. And the second big dip is in at Thanksgiving. So it seems that, and that might be a good thing, that people actually take some time off and spend it with their friends, with their families, and not being online all the time. Though probably on Monday, Cyber Monday, people just are eager to go on and buy stuff.
Facebook is in the news today, Michele, and it's because they have reached an agreement with the Federal Trade Commission in the United States in relation to privacy. They attracted attention, didn't they, back in 2009 with Facebook Beacon and some other features like that. And definitely they haven't been good in relation to privacy, have they?
They've got a pretty dire record in relation to privacy, to be perfectly blunt. I mean, they may have settled things with the FTC, but there's still an ongoing investigation, as far as I know, in Europe.
There is. And the Data Protection Commissioner in Ireland, I think, is investigating them as well. What they've committed to, apparently, in the United States is audits for the next 20 years of their privacy practice and a promise that basically there's going to be no more opt-out services introduced, that if they're going to decrease somebody's privacy, you've got to actually opt in or at least be asked first to make a decision whether you opt in or opt out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, look, you know, they make their money from people's content and people's profiles.
So people being private really isn't in their interest.
Well, ultimately, well, no. Mm. I mean, the thing is, you see, they don't have the same user base as, say, Google would have. I mean, they have a huge user base, but they wouldn't be able to see the same things. All they can see is what goes on when somebody is logged into a Facebook account, and they can pull data from the Facebook profile, and they can do interesting things with the relationships and all that kind of thing. Mm. But the problem is, of course, they kind of have this attitude that, you know, sharing is good, whereas a lot of people mightn't even be aware of what they're sharing.
And Mark Zuckerberg has come out now and he's made a blog post and sort of said, yes, we have made mistakes. What do you think, Andras?
So I think that there are actually two different issues at stake. And one part is, which mostly the story with FTC is about, is, okay, how much of the user data is made public on the internet? So will they open up the photos and just have it as an opt-out and not as an opt-in? Stuff that users directly expose as themselves to the internet, how the Facebook will behave around that. And that for Facebook is important because this is the way they can grow, because if they open up their profiles a bit, maybe a bit more users stick to them and get into Facebook and similar. And that's important for them from the product perspective. On the other hand, I think much more important is what kind of models they can do to monetize those users. And for that, they have to be able and allowed to kind of aggregate and then do very precise targeting on top of this private user information. They might say they anonymize it, they don't tell to the advertiser who exactly was targeted, but at the end, much more to the heart would be preventing Facebook from using that information for ad targeting, even if not distributing it to any other user, to any other company, but just to do a very, very precise ad targeting. And I think they might have much more problems there down the road, especially in Europe, since the kind of attitude toward this use of the private data, even when done in a pretty responsible way, is very different in Europe than in US. And I think that until we see how the Europe and Facebook settle the disagreements, we won't see the end of this story yet.
These kind of investigations and these kind of things are the kind of thing that could drag on for years. It's interesting that it's been settled so quickly in the United States. But one of the reasons, I think, why Facebook would be anxious to settle some things like that is that there's talk about them going for an IPO. Floating on the stock exchange hasn't been a route that companies have taken in recent times.
I mean, there have been a few IPOs, but I mean, the Demand Media IPO is one that I would have been aware of because obviously they're involved in the domain industry. But I mean, I've been watching, you know, some of the people commenting on that, and it's like, oh, it's up, it's down, it's sideways, it's this way, it's that way. And there's definitely this kind of, you know, what's going to happen, how much are they going to be worth type of thing. I mean, you know, how much is Facebook actually worth? How much will people pay for it when this comes down to it? I mean, it'd be interesting to see.
Well, they're talking about floating it next year for, I think, 10% of the company for $10 billion, which values the entire company at $100 billion, which is kind of unheard of, really, isn't it?
It's mad money. I mean, being blunt about it.
they used to traditionally, certainly back in the dot-com days, you used to talk about, and by the dot-com days, I mean, I suppose, that pre-2001 boom, they used to talk about valuing companies on a per-user basis. This works out, according to the Telegraph, or anyone who wants to do simple arithmetic, this works out at a valuation per user at 800 million Facebook users at $125 each. What would you think of that, Andras? Is that a reasonable valuation for Facebook?
Well, if all those would be active users, that might be. Since a lot of those are probably just profiles, it's questionable of how many active users Facebook exactly has. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a huge number, but it's probably not 800 million. On the other hand, I think we won't see the real value of Facebook until 10 years down the road. And of course, then either people say, hey, this was completely crazy, or people saying this was not enough. One will be right. Who will that be? It's just speculation. And I think a lot of the tech press is kind of turning in this very yellowish kind of media speculating on this and that. Really, the market will tell. And for the fast-growing companies, be it Facebook, but also others like Groupon and Zynga and so on, and there's such a dynamic industry, things can change so fast as they did with MySpace. I kind of hope that Facebook won't repeat the MySpace story, but we'll be in for a very interesting ride nevertheless. Mm.
You mentioned Zynga there, and that's going to be very instructive because their IPO date has now been set for mid-December. I'm quoting from a story in TechCrunch, which we'll link to in the notes as well. They are going to basically start recruiting people for that and start campaigning for that IPO. And Zynga, given that Facebook is the platform that many of Zynga's games and much of their revenue and success has been built on, in a way they'd be kind of linked, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, this is a key thing, isn't it? I mean, Zynga and a bunch of those other companies are so tied into Facebook. Mm. I mean, Andras, you guys don't rely on any particular platform, do you?
No, we don't rely on any particular. However, in our business, WordPress is the biggest kind of elephant. And then you have Tumblr, which is also growing amazingly, and some others. And it's always, as a business, it's always challenging to know that, like, I know half of your users or more are on one platform. If that platform decides that you're not their, I know, a game maker of choice, life can get tough for you. And for Zynga, it seems that they have kind of okay relationship with Facebook. However, let's say 2 or 3 years down the road, when things change and Facebook goes public, they will be forced to hit the estimates of Wall Street, and they won't care whether they will hurt Zynga or not at that point if they think that they could squeeze a tiny bit more profit from games. So it would be similar as what happened with Google and Apple falling out. They had a very cordial relationship at the beginning, and now you can see where we are. I could imagine the similar story going on between the Facebook and Zynga a couple of years down the road.
Mm. It's moving into a new phase, really, when a company goes public, and there are many reasons why companies have put it off. I heard there also today that one of the reasons Facebook may as well go public now at this stage is that in terms of the number of individual investors they now have, they are at the stage where they have to start doing some kind of reporting of annual accounts and things like that. And when you get to that stage, you may as well actually go public. But Michaela, there's never been an IPO with this kind of evaluation, $100 billion? Is it? Have we any precedent here?
Evaluation. I mean,
yeah, I know, but
you know, it sounds like we're in Austin Powers movie.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, you look at a company like Google. I can't remember what the latest valuation on it is, but you know, it's a very, very, very big high number. But at the same time, they have real tangible revenues, and they're adding revenues in a whole load of different things all the time. Whereas you look at Facebook, you know, what's the revenue coming from? The advertising?
Well,
is there any other revenue stream that they have?
Yeah, it's all potential, and it's all speculation, I suppose, really, when you get to an IPO stage. Google's market cap at the moment is $192 billion, according to Actually, it's funny. I Googled it, and the answer, of course, comes from finance.yahoo.com. First result on Google. But yeah, no. So we're talking about half the capitalization of Google is what this IPO would value Facebook as. And recent kind of flotations are not too encouraging, really, either. And I'm talking in particular about Groupon and LinkedIn. LinkedIn, apparently, in particular, getting to the stage now where some of their employees and investors who were obliged to hold on to those shares are now coming up to a period when they'll be able to sell them, and they're afraid that there could be quite a drop in the value of LinkedIn shares, and also in relation to Groupon, that I think current valuation it's at 42% of the IPO price.
I don't think these current valuations are very indicative of long-term success of this company. Mm. I think that Groupon is so volatile, the business by itself, that like in a year we will have at least a slight idea whether this is a long-term business or not. And LinkedIn, on the other hand, has nicely been growing. Mm. And if they can continue to grow with the same pace, I'm sure that share price will go up eventually. However, there is also a macroeconomic here at play, and as we know, the world isn't the brightest point right now. So those swings might be still very, very big, and I wouldn't say that LinkedIn and Groupon are a failure just because a couple of months afterwards they fall. The question would be what happens half a year after. If they are still at the same price, then yes, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's move
on. The thing as well is if you take Groupon, they may have been the first and they may have been the most successful, but it's not hard. It's not that hard for somebody to launch a competitor. I mean, you look here in Ireland, we've got several big competitors like the Boards deals. You've got the Pigs Back deals. There's another one from one of the newspapers. I think the Independent has one. And there's a few others. And there's probably ones in a lot of other countries that are easing into their market share pretty quickly. Whereas, say, with LinkedIn, and LinkedIn does something which I personally I think is pretty kind of unique. But yeah, Andreas is right. I mean, it's really a case of, you know, what was the price that was originally set a bit too high? Mm-hmm. And is it now kind of coming back to something that's, you know, more realistic? And will it kind of stabilize at that level? I mean, who knows?
Let's move on. Last week on the program, Michaela, we talked about the Stop Online Piracy Act and Protect IP Acts, two bills which are being debated in the United States, and how they would give US authorities the entitlement to basically delist sites and host names in DNS. But they already have certain powers under existing legislation, and they've exercised those, in fact, this week. And you mentioned in particular last week, Michele, the fake pharma counterfeit designer goods and things like that are in there in that as well to be considered. They've, I think, seized 150 websites and seized the domains.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the first time they've done this. ICE, which is part of Homeland Security, and there's a bunch of other three-letter acronyms that you can look at if you look at any of the coverage. Yeah, what they've been doing is they've been going directly to the domain registry, which in the case of .com would be VeriSign, and they've had the domains pulled. They're seizing the domains entirely, and what's happening is that those domains are then being redirected to an FBI, ICE holder page. Most of the domains that they're seizing in these kind of operations are ones in relation to, you know, counterfeit fashion goods. So it's all kind of knockoffs and fakes and things like that. But it's an area, you know, that they're even if the SOPA stuff doesn't go through in its present form, you know, the White House made another official statement yesterday evening about another move against, you know, trademark and copyright infringement. And the way they look at it is that, you know, a lot of these sites, they're, to quote their PR, basically stealing American jobs. The problem, I suppose, is this, is that, you know, the fake stuff is one thing, but what happens when they start using it for something else? What happens if they start using it because they don't like, I don't know, what somebody is saying? that's something that I'd be concerned about.
What's your take on this, Andras? Should government stay out of seizing domain names and policing the internet in this way?
Well, that's what probably a lot of us in a tech business would wish for. Now, I have to agree with Michele that simply when you start with using one tool to first do something that we agree to some level that is really unwanted, and then it's really, really easy in a digital world to extend the same tool and suppress, WikiLeaks next time. Why not? Mm-hmm. So what we could want for is like a lot of legal supervision of this, making sure there are so many safeguards that it's not really easy for any agency on their own to use this. And we've seen that legislation in US where basically what they are trying to do is make this more of a widespread tactic. And I don't think this is the case just with seizing domain names. The same is with kind of getting access to the logs of web companies and so on. The government always will try to first say, hey, we need to fight child pornography or terrorism. And then when they pass a law that allows them, gives them the tool, they say, oh, this tool can be also used for the next worst crime and so on. And eventually it will be not just used but abused. In a way, for our industry, we have to be vigilant and try to see those kind of expansion of rights of those organizations and fight back. What we've seen was, I think, amazing unions of those companies, organizations that together said, like, this is completely unacceptable type of legislation. Unfortunately, I think there will have to be a compromise, or fortunately, because kind of we live in a society where we actually want to have some kind of compromise at the end.
The compromise is obviously the key. I mean, you have to get the balance right. For any of us involved in the internet industry, a safe internet is a better internet. It's better for business. So if the more people spending money online, the more people are happy interacting with the web and spending their money there and spending their time there and spending their free time there, the better. And if they're having a bad experience and if they're being scammed or ripped off or poisoned or having a negative experience, then that's bad for us. But at the same time, you know, you don't want it to end up where, you know, you're using a sledgehammer to crack a walnut. You need to make sure that the response is correct, it's measured, it's proportionate. Not easy to do.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Michele. The question is, what can companies do? I mean, we can raise our voice. How are you organized? Are you organized in Ireland around these kind of issues, the industry?
No. I mean, we really aren't. I mean, the industry in Ireland, there's one or two organizations that do some work in this area, but the membership base and everything else wouldn't even be big enough to be significant. I mean, it's significant enough, I suppose, but just they're not vocal enough, let's just say.
Interestingly enough, in Slovenia, one of the center points of kind of uncovering new plots, how to change the legislation to allow new powers, is one tech forum here. So like tech forum where really very young people usually hang out, but there are some people that kind of follow what the legislation procedures are and point out very quickly when something weird has been proposed, and then they kind of organize this public opinion to react to that. So it's kind of weird because industry, while it reacts to separate cases, is not really organized as like an interest group.
Let's move on. And speaking of interest groups and politicians and things like this, I put into the notes there, Michele, the story which was reported on the web and indeed reported on the Telegraph. I don't know if it made it in the Daily Telegraph print edition, but it certainly was online. It's been taken down now. I've rather alliteratively headlined it, Connemara Councillor Clueless on Cloud Computing. It was a report of some kind of local authority debate in County Galway. The details were all a little bit vague, where one councillor ended up calling another a feckin' idiot after he described Connemara as being an ideal place for cloud computing because of the overcast climate.
Yeah, I know. It was interesting because, you know, a lot of days I wouldn't see the news or hear it until, yeah, you know, somebody brings it to me practically.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were tweeting these links to both my own personal account and to the Black Knight account on Twitter. You're like, you know, have you seen this? Have you seen this?
Yes.
And then it turns out the entire thing wasn't true.
It wasn't. This is being reported now that it wasn't true, and one blogger in particular has kind of declared that he can't find any basis for it. The councillor names quoted in the report don't appear to correspond to anybody on a local authority in either Galway City or county, and it all seems a little bit vague. But there was some kind of an element of plausibility on it. The fictional councillor who claimed ignorance who claimed to believe that cloud computing had something to do with actual clouds. He was saying then, you know, that he was referring to, I think there have been stories about companies citing large data centres in cool and temperate countries because of the fact that the air conditioning and the cooling costs are lower. So he might have had, maybe unwittingly, even if there was such a statement made by anybody, it did seem kind of plausible when he talked about that, didn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, jokes aside and everything else, I mean, it's a lot of politicians, both local and national,
yeah,
are very good at regurgitating the buzzwords without really understanding what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I can easily see a situation arising where some, you know, local politician or even a national politician could end up...
getting the wrong end of the stick.
The wrong end of the stick, to be polite about.
Did this story make it to Slovenia, Andras? Irish politician misunderstands cloud computing?
It didn't. I don't think I've seen it, and I think I'm lucky for it, right? However, I would add that, like, it's not such a wild idea. We've seen a lot of science fiction, like, okay, we could have a mesh of small objects floating around, I know, insects, and actually have a cloud of insects that can compute things. I think Stanislaw Lem wrote something about that. And I think Douglas Adams wrote about the world that was in a cloud, where the cloud was actually a computer. So maybe that's a bit off right now, but as mesh networks and small devices get smaller, get into insects, we might have a cloud flowing around that's actually a computer. Who knows?
Who knows is right. It's a problem, really, when we use buzzwords, and certainly politicians and even state agencies tend to latch on to buzzwords. And the latest thing, definitely in this country, has been cloud computing. What about in Slovenia, Andras? What kind of strategy does government have there, or what kind of business are they hoping to attract and develop in your country?
I would love to have a very clear answer. Mm. However, I don't know about any such very precise or defined strategy, except, of course, very vague, like we want greenfield investment, we want high-tech companies. But then when it comes to having a like cohesive strategy that would kind of take care of the whole cycle from funding those companies at the beginning, making sure they can get capital, knowledge, people and so on, that's kind of missing. And there are one-off things. Oh, we will build new Silicon Valley in Slovenia, but then you ask, yes, and what do you mean by that? And nobody actually kind of knows. I think that the latest weird thing was somebody saying that Slovenia should close most of the embassies in Europe and open one in Silicon Valley. That's the heat political topic right now, right, since we have an election in a couple of days. And so it's fun. On the other hand, what we're seeing, while I can be a bit critical about not having any general aim from top level down politically, from the bottom up, there are a lot of startups that, despite the with no strategy around, are kind of blossoming, and I'm a strong believer that some of them will blossom in great companies, international companies, since there is no local market, and kind of internet, digital technologies are opening up are making it more global, the world more flat, and companies even from small countries like Slovenia can compete at the same level as companies from other countries. So we have, for example, one mobile app, Talking Tom. It's an entertainment app, like 100 million downloads, and the developers are from Slovenia.
I know that one.
Yeah, they're a bit smaller than Rovio, but still extremely cute story, and they're not from Silicon Valley. So now it's possible, and more and more and more possible, to succeed even if you're not there, though you have to quite often go on the plane and meet people in person to make business.
Anyone with small kids who has an iPhone knows about Talking Tom and hates Talking Tom. But the kids absolutely love it. Have you come across it, Michele? No.
No. Sorry.
It's one of these ones where there's a cat on a screen. It's a cartoon character. There are other characters as well, but it basically parrots your words back to you. And kids never, ever get tired of it. Adults can stick it, I think, for about 30 seconds, and that's about it. Andraz, your company, Zemanta, is one of those Slovenian startups. We want to hear more about you specifically in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to talk to Michele about Black Knight, blacknight.com, sponsors of technology.ie. And your new cloud hosting product, Michele, is doing well?
Not bad. It's nice to see we're getting people talking to us about it, trying to find out. They're asking us lots of interesting questions. Some of them we have the answers for. Some of them we have to go off and ask other people to help us get the answers for. But, you know, it's good to see that there's a nice buzz about it, because there's several companies offering not dissimilar products and services into the Irish market. But, you know, we're probably the largest one to launch a product like this, and we're able to add it to the existing range of products and services. So, you know, it's pretty cool. I'm happy with it so far.
Good. Well, it's a very interesting addition to your products and services. Virtual servers starting at $12.99. More details about that on blacknight.com. You've also relaunched and redesigned your blog at blog.blacknight.com. Very nice.
Yeah, it was in need of an overhaul and a kind of a refresh. Was we're changing the kind of corporate style and everything else across all the websites.
And the other thing as well, you're of course web hosting and domains is what you do at Black Knight. You're the only Irish ICANN registered domain registrar, and you're selling .XXX domains as well. The sunrise phases and the land rush, that's all over now, and we're into general availability for .XXX domains.
We'll be into general availability next week.
Okay.
At the moment, it's like a kind of a quiet period. It's a bit like the calm before the storm.
So if you are, and again, if you're not involved in the adult industry, you can buy a domain, but it won't do anything. It won't resolve. Isn't that right?
Yeah. The thing is, it's this concept of declaring that you're part of the adult community. So if you say, I'm a part of the adult community, then you can use the domain. It'll resolve. You can set up email on it, set it up on a website, redirect it somewhere else, do whatever you want.
And equally, if you don't want any part of that, if you're like me, for example, and you just want to say, I want to buy my domain in that TLD.
Come on, Con, don't be like that. I thought you were going to set up the first Irish-speaking porn site.
not today. No, it's not in next year's business plan.
Con, I had great hopes for you. I thought the entrepreneurial spirit had reached West Clare.
Gaelporn.XXX. Ni doile mé. I don't think so, Michele. Not this time. But I could, for example, go and register that and have it do nothing but protect if I had a particular domain name. Now, obviously, the better thing would have been to take part in one of the earlier phases, but you can still do that if you want to buy your domain so that no one else can use it.
Yeah, but you have to wait, obviously, until the thing opens up again. I mean, we've had actually a couple of people asking us even in the last 24, 48 hours, you know, can we do this? Can we do that? It's like, you know, you miss the window. You're going to have to wait now, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm. You've got a point, though, in fairness, Michele. It is a growth opportunity. Politicians definitely are not going to throw the .XXX buzzword around the same way that they do cloud computing. What do you think, Andras? Is there an interest in .XXX in Slovenia?
I haven't heard of any. This is not really the hottest topic here. I think most of the sites are operating with .si domain, but I don't really know much about that market.
Like me,
you should be putting poor Andras on the spot. He's got a very nice young lady.
We tried. we try to organize a presentation here. We have so weekly presentations of web companies, web projects, and so on. And we actually invited somebody that professionally has porn sites, and he kind of opened up a few more unknown sides of that business. And he said that it used to be very lucrative, but it's getting pretty crowded now.
Interesting. Well, we'll no doubt hear more about it as we've talked about it ad nauseum really on this program before about .xxx, and some people have said, oh no, not more .xxx, but it is interesting in terms of what they're trying to do with that industry online, and I suppose clean up and regulate things to a great deal. Okay, that's it. You can find out more about Black Knight products, of course, at blacknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to Technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight with Con and Michele. And our guest this week, Andras Torri of Zamanta.com. Andras, we're going to ask you more about your company in a minute and where the idea came from and where you hope that it's all going. I want to refer briefly to feedback from the audience on the site at Technology.ie. Don't forget you can leave a comment there and we love to get them. We had really an interesting discussion last week, Michele, in relation to, we had Julian Goff on as our guest. We were talking about intellectual property and SOPA, and we were talking about Google Music being launched and what was the best thing to use for music in Ireland. We kind of said that really iTunes is where it's at the moment. You recommended I take a look at Last FM. Michele, I logged in last night into Last FM and I discovered that I hadn't been there in 5 years. So it's extraordinary. It doesn't seem to click with me. I did a bit more with it this time because I actually imported my iTunes playlists and uploaded that to Last FM. But you can't actually specifically, it creates a playlist for you. It creates a radio station for you based on the music you like to listen to. But you can't really choose to listen to a particular track at a particular time, can you?
No, but that's not what it's aimed at. I mean, yeah. I think Spotify allows you to do that, but with Last FM, it's more to do with styles of music. So
yeah,
I could fire up, say, a soundtrack station here, and it would play me random soundtracks. Or, which I think is much more interesting sometimes, is I could listen to what a bunch of my friends like listening to. So I could listen to James's radio station, as it were.
Yeah.
Every man to his own. I mean, I find that the Last FM thing is very, very good at making suggestions to me.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Well, that's some interesting feedback, didn't we?
We did, from Eilish Ní Bhfuarán, actually left a comment on the site the other night, and she left a comment, Os Gaeilge, likes to hear the Cúpla Focal Os Gaeilge from myself, and we'll have to encourage you, I think, Michele. You're a linguist, really. You're somebody who's into languages and stuff like that. We need to hear more Irish from you, I think.
Well, I think that there's a reason why I don't speak particularly good Irish.
Why? What is that?
So I've never gone out with a monolinguistic Gaeilge girl.
That's the difference, isn't it? Yeah, you've got to do that, I think. I think if you're going to get really fluent in a language, it certainly does provide people with an incentive. Well, Eilish, anyway, was someone who left a comment there the other night, and she said that she uses mp3tunes.com, which I checked out. It's a music locker. It's in the cloud, basically, and it didn't work very well for me. Now, I was using Safari on Mac when I accessed it, but it didn't seem to work that well. I couldn't quite get it to upload my music into it. But that's basically what that does. It takes your music, it puts it in the cloud. And for a fee, if you sign up for it, there is an Android app, I think, and an iPhone app that you can have. And they'll basically stream your music. Eilish is using it and it seems to work quite well. She says it works in Ireland. There's, you know, it's a kind of a grey area. There's no real, you know, it's debatable as to whether or not there's a licensing issue. You've bought and paid for the music. It's on your computer, and all you're doing is storing it somewhere else. Really, you can stream that to your mobile device then, or whatever it is. But Stuart Curry left a comment as well, which I think was very interesting, and he's using Spotify in Ireland, which I didn't think you could, but apparently you can if you were in early enough.
Yeah, I think a few people managed to get into a few of those services before they decided, "Ara, no, we won't sell to you at all."
Yeah.
I don't think I ever actually got a Spotify account.
Yeah, he said he was grandfathered in from an early sign-up. The tagging is terrible. He says listening to artist radio plays 80% just that artist rather than similar bands. He says Last FM has the opposite problem. If you ask for music like the Pixies, and you'll never hear a Pixies song. But he said Spotify is great for finding bands that you do like and making track lists, etc. People can go and read the comments for themselves. They're on the website at technology.ie. And we love the comments that people leave us. In particular, I want to say Gurumagath as well to Eilish, because comments are welcome in any language that we can manage. We can certainly welcome Irish on the site as well. And the other thing we ask people a lot as well is how they actually listen to us. Eilish said she listens on a Roberts WM201 internet radio, which I'm not sure exactly if you can subscribe to RSS in an internet radio, but I was looking up the specs on that last night, and apparently you can sync it up with a PC on your network and use that to actually, so if she, I presume she's using iTunes or something like that to subscribe to the podcast. If it's a different story, do let us know, Eilish, what the story is with that. But well, let's move on. We have a very special guest with us today, Andras Torrey of Zamanta. He's CTO of Zamanta. Andras, what is Zamanta and where did the idea come from?
So Zamanta is a personal writing assistant. Which means it tries to help you while you write. It reads the text alongside while you write it and says, hey, you're writing about Dublin. Here are 5 photos of it. Maybe you want to use one of those in your blog post. Mm. Or it says, hey, you're writing about this great conference on, let's say, domain names. There are 5 other people that also wrote articles about the conference. You might want to link them out so your readers can read about it. So at the end, we aim to be a friend, like an automatic friend that looks over your shoulder and says, hey, you're writing about this. You can improve it by adding some links, adding some images, and your readers will be happier. And how it started? Well, actually, we started with doing services for national television to help them create shows out of their subtitles, out of the closed captioning. And we developed all these smart technologies that quote understand the unquote language, and then we use them for help of bloggers.
Okay, so you essentially you parse the text that somebody types, and you figure out what it is they're talking about and what it is they're most likely to be interested in terms of resources, specifically photographs and links that they might like to use in their article.
Correct.
So does it only work for blogs, or are there other applications of it?
So, of course, we would like to think that the whole world of writing should change. Blogs, emails, reports, that a computer should be smart enough to help with some insight of the topic you're writing about. However, as a small company, we have to kind of focus and have one product, but that one really good. Mm. So we decided that the bloggers are people that we can really, really help to write more efficiently, create more beautiful blogs and more interesting ones. So at the end, we help them kind of please their readers, and hopefully through that, make sure they have more readers and more engaged readers.
It really works really, really well. I mean, Colm, we've got the plugin for it set up on the technology.ie site.
Yes.
So you've been using it a bit for the last few weeks, haven't you?
I have, yeah, and I like it. You know, you've got to type a certain minimum of words before it kicks in, but then it does, and it goes off and finds you photographs and things like that. Now, the only problem I find in relation to it is that I'm not really putting it to the test on technology.ie, because I basically write the same kind of post every week on it. But I'm very encouraged to install it on some of my other sites and blogs as well, and use it for that. Andras, how did you get the funding to start it? What was involved with that?
So that was the end of 2007. We went through this boot camp for startups called Seed Camp in London. So they said, hey, we're looking for next big web companies coming out of Europe. If you have a hard problem and you're able to solve it, apply. And we were a few young guys from Slovenia, said, let's try, and got through to London and got some seed funding from Seed Camp Fund. It was like 50,000 euros, with which we spent 3 months in London, the whole team, 6 people, adapting it for the bloggers, for the English-speaking environment. And then we were looking for VCs, so venture capital, and eventually got Eden Ventures from London and the Accelerator Group. And then we were quite content, and we said, okay, now we have to launch our tool. We have to make it as good as possible. We did. We kind of dug in, coded. And on the first trip to US, we realized, like, okay, but what really matters is just, do we have a great tool for US bloggers? Are we correctly positioned, because it's the biggest market in the world, in a sense, for us? And we started looking for US VCs. Luckily, we at the end ended up with Union Square Ventures, which have been great, and now we have a kind of outpost in New York for our marketing, biz dev, sales, and everything else.
You've mentioned New York, you've mentioned London, and of course you're based in Slovenia as well, Andras. Where do you see the company actually being based or headquartered, or how do you see yourselves as a company? Are you a Slovenian company? Are you a Silicon Valley company? Does it matter?
I get this question quite a lot. I think it really doesn't matter. We see ourselves as international company serving English-speaking markets.
But do you have any, like, for example, like some startups think, oh, you know, we have to be in the Valley, we have to be in California, we have to be, you know, seen to be in country X. And some of them even, you know, put down their address on their website and everything as being, you know, in the US, even though we all know that they're based in, you know, Poland or Slovakia or whatever.
I mean, well, do you think? I think... So what we've seen from business, you can have a company anywhere. You can create great product anywhere. But to build strong business ties, to build trust, the only way to do it is actually to go and meet people from other companies, your users, in person. And I think that is for as soon as you have something else that maybe not just an app, but something where you have to make business deal, that's a must. So you have to meet people you do business with in person. And that's why we set up the New York office. That's why I am often in San Francisco, but we don't need to be seen as San Francisco native company, because many companies in San Francisco understand that other companies are at other places. However, what they need to know and what you have to establish is that no matter where in the world you are there to stay. You are a reliable partner. You are going to fulfill all your business contracts, and you work with them and build trust through the years, no matter where you are.
And how are you organized now, Andras? Do you have many employees? Are you all based in Slovenia? Are you some of you in Silicon Valley or in New York?
So our organization currently is, we have about 15 engineers, a bit more in Slovenia, and this is basically engineering. And then we have 5 people in New York right now, which is business, sales, marketing, and everything else. So in a way, engineering can be anywhere, while the people that need to have a very close touch with your market needs to be close to that market. And to make things even more funny, our holding company is actually in London, but we don't even have an office there.
You mentioned sales and marketing. Who are you selling to? How are you making money?
And okay. When will you sell me the hosting keyword, Andras?
So, starting where and what we're doing. Hmm. When we suggest content, it's not entirely unlike search. So when we suggest 5 more articles about the conference you've been to and you're writing about, it looks almost like search results. And of course, the first thing we thought about is, hey, why couldn't some of them be sponsored? So sites that, for example, for movies, we have Flixster.com, who is our advertiser. And they say, hey, every time somebody mentions an actor or a movie, can you suggest them to link to our profile and our information about that movie? And then we say to the blogger, hey, Flixster has a great page on this. It's a promoted page. You might want to link to it. And the blogger decides whether he wants to do it or not. And we charge our advertiser, Flixster in this case, for the recommendation we did to a blogger. So kind of it's an advertising model, but instead of the final goal being the blogger, for example, clicking through to the site, is the blogger saying, yes, that site actually offers some valuable information for my readers, and I want to share it with my readers by including it in my post. And then going back to Michele's question about hosting keywords, well, we can only suggest content to our bloggers that really adds value. So if, for example, Black Knight has a awesome pages on all the tricks of hosting and basically like a content full pages with great advice or something like that, we can say, hey, when you mention this specialized kind of hosting, these guys have the right content that you should also share with your readers about that. And in that case, we can do the promotion campaign. So in a way, because we have to think so
you're not open to bribery is what you're saying.
What?
You're not open to bribery.
So you won't
let me just buy you out.
You also have great content on the other side. So you can bribe us after you have some specialized, in a way, great content. And we've seen that a lot of marketing agencies are now preparing for big brands, for smaller brands, like these awesome guides, content pages that are really not just promotion, but are really, really valuable to the readers, and they want to promote those, since that in turn promotes their brand. And we're more than happy then to promote such content. I'm sure Black Knight could find some content like that.
Mm. I think it's exciting and interesting because this is a play on blogs and on all the different niches that blogs address. And for every interest and vertical, if you like, out there, there is a blog for it and there is an audience for that blog. And you've already mentioned web hosting. You've already mentioned film as potential subjects that blogs could be dealing with. So in many ways, it's kind of exciting because the list of your potential markets and verticals that you can actually sell into is kind of exciting. But what I want to know, Andras, is how do you measure the value of that, or how does the, or does it depend on clicks?
Right now, what we do is we report on this, okay, these bloggers choose your site as the valuable and link to it. And then we report on, for example, how many retweets or likes those pages from where you got a link had. So in a way, we offer some of that information. However, we're seeing from the market that they would like us to do more analytics to have a deeper insight into blogosphere. And here we come also to the next things that we want to do. We believe that a lot of bloggers would be able to use the tool that doesn't just suggest content in response to what they're writing, but also suggest what they could write about. So, for example, for Black Knight, there might be some really hot topic that he's getting really a lot of traffic somewhere on the internet, and it would be really valuable to write something about it so the users or readers of the blog would be kind of happy and informed. So we hope to create tools for inspirational bloggers to kind of guide them of what their topics of their blog posts could be, and through that, again, increase both their blogging frequency and their blogging success.
Are you doing anything to partner with content producers and in particular perhaps with media organizations in terms of offering the Zemanta tools to them? Obviously, they're free to bloggers and individuals to use. Is it in your interest to get perhaps high traffic professional content sites to use your tools as well?
We do have some use. So, for example, Forbes bloggers are using our tool. And we have some guys posting on, I don't know, CNN blogs with our tool and similar. However, a couple of years back when we were still in search of the business model before we went into this advertising business model, we tried to sell into these big, large media organizations and found out that it's really a very, very different market. You basically need to become a customized solution provider. You need to become an integrator of their existing tools. And it's a very different business that is, at least from our perspective, not that scalable as is like 10 million of long tail bloggers.
So how big are you, and how, talking about scaling, how big are you now and how big do you hope to get?
Well, currently we have something above 70,000 active users, active meaning they blocked with our tool in the last month. And we definitely hope to get that to five times more in a couple of years, 2 years, for example. And we mainly try to do that through partnering, not so much with media houses, but with hosting providers. Because we improve the experience for the bloggers, we try to make it smoother for them to create better content. This is good for hosting providers also. So we have, for example, an agreement with WordPress. So inside WordPress.com, so hosted platform blogs, people can turn on Zemanta and it's there. They don't need to install anything locally. They don't need to install anything on their servers. In case of WordPress.com, they don't have access to them. They just need to check a box and say, yes, I want to have recommendations, a smart assistant while I write. And we see this as a possible way to basically get into hands of more bloggers. I have to add that Michele is actually one of the earliest users of Zemanta. I think in
I'm
the
still
first
an active
month,
user.
And still an active user. Yeah, in the first month of launching, I know that we got an email from Michele and we were really happy about it. And then a couple of months ago, I saw Michele on the list of the speakers of a conference and tried to remember where did I see that name. I went through my mailbox in the search and said, damn it, that was that user from 3 years ago. I still remember him.
He's the quintessential early adopter, I think, Andras, without a doubt. We wish
he's got an odd name, which is why you remember it.
Yes, probably that too.
We wish you the very best of luck, Andras, and thanks for talking to us on technology.ie.
Thank you for your invitation. It was interesting, and I wish you a lot of luck with the further editions.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andras.
Thanks to you as well, Michele, and thanks to you, the listener, as well. Don't forget you can find out more and leave a comment and get back issues of the programme as well. Listen to them all. This is episode 10 of the technology.ie podcast, and it's all on the website there at technology.ie. Until next week, slán go fóill.